mashed potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, I'm going to be talking about the new film Saw X, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, Flora and Son, The Creator, Paw Patrol, The Mighty Movie, and Launchpad Season 2. I'm also going to be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup, featuring a look back at The Exorcist. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Blue Sky or Mastodon, I'm at Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
No, I am not talking about this Christopher Nolan James Bond rumor. I'm not even going to entertain it. It's a rumor. If it gets decided, I will weigh in on it and then go on an epic rant about Christopher Nolan. But until then, I'm not talking about it. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about other things. Things that might make me happier. Things like the box office and the Expendables not doing well at all. So let's talk about the box office. The Expendables was a flop. It couldn't even hit number one after The Nun, which had been out for a couple weeks. It was one thing for A Haunting in Venice to not beat The Nun 2 in its second weekend, but The Nun 2 is considered a big hit mainly because it's been at number one for 3 weeks by just barely squeaking by. The Expendables barely made $8 million, which is nothing compared to the other movies. And a lot of that's because it was weakened, it was neutered, it was everything that was the problem with it, and it was also 9 years since the last movie. And then you had A Haunting in Venice do. It's holding on decently. I think it's going to have decent legs. It's not going to make a huge ton of money, but it's going to be there. The other thing that's kind of interesting is Barbie's still in the top five. It's spent 10 weeks in the top five. That kind of thing is very rare for a movie to not leave the top five for 2.5 months. Kudos to Barbie. It's over $630 million domestically. That saved the box office this summer. The next piece of news, I just have to talk about it. The strike. Well, the WGA strike is over. I was surprised it got taken care of because I wasn't 100% convinced it was going to get a deal because both sides seemed very steadfast in not budging. But ultimately, the studios realized they had to capitulate. And here's the thing, historically, this is what happens with labor disputes. This is why labor works. This is why unions work. And I know there are some unions and that have corruption and there's misappropriation of funds and you're going to find bad people and bad actors doing bad things in all places. But when you put the power in the hands of the people in a labor union, that gives them negotiating power, because otherwise the studios, the bosses who really control the purse strings, can do whatever they want to and lower the amount of money. And especially in something like writing and the entertainment industry, there's so many people that want to be in that to get a consistent income, you have to work as a group. You have to unionize. You have to have some sort of organization that looks out for each other. And when it comes time to make changes, or when it comes time to get paid your fair share, or if your fair share has been dwindling over the years, the entire workforce refusing to work until they get paid their fair share or adjusting their fair share is how this stuff works. And if you look historically, whenever there's a big strike, eventually the bosses have to capitulate. And they don't do it immediately because they don't want to give away the farm, but at a certain point they realize this is going to go on. And the fact that the unions were unified, the fact that the writers didn't budge, and it was over 4.5 months for them doing this. And that's impressive, because a lot of times they try and divide and conquer, and there's whole strategies involved in labor disputes. But one of the things that became a joke, actually, that was made a point by the writers, is the studio system, as it is today, had basically trained the writers to not have consistent work. They basically trained the writers to have other sources of incomes to develop in the gig economy or other jobs, because they were being paid so poorly or so inconsistently that even the professional writers weren't doing it full time. So when it came time to strike, you weren't losing your entire paycheck. You know, like my wife's a teacher. If their union were to strike, that's our paycheck. But the writers, a lot of times it's supplementary income anyways because of the way they've pushed it. And at that point, it just gave them enough power because they had enough income and support elsewhere. So it was a miscalculation in the extreme by the studios. And we're actually seeing this right the ship. It's the same thing that happened when TV came in. It's the same thing that happened when home video came in. Now you have streaming and you have to set up a way for writers to make a living. The actors are next. And as I understand it, they're going to use the writer's agreement as a template and do their negotiations, which will be good. And hopefully this will get wrapped up. Because once they budged, once the studios blinked, the actors now know that they can do it. And you want to talk about people who don't get consistent work? It's actors. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is the Doctor Who 60th Anniversary Special, which is coming to the BBC and BBC America, I'm assuming, on November 23rd or thereabouts.
I've got this friend called Donna Noble. I had to wipe her memory to save her life. So what happens next? The spaceship crashes right in front of her. It's like she's drawing us in. I don't believe in destiny, but if destiny exists, then it is heading for Donna Noble.
And I've got a memory. After a very long time, something's coming back.
Who are they?
Monsters.
Everybody knows I'm a huge Doctor Who fan. I'm actually going back and I'm watching some of my old favorite episodes from the 70s, the stuff with the fourth Doctor, Tom Baker. I'm in the last serial with Sarah Jane Smith, and it's sad because I know she exits the show then. I mean, yeah, you get Leela and she runs around in like loincloths and stuff like that, and that's great. But it just kind of feels like an end of the era. You know, rest in peace, Elizabeth Sladen. But going back to the Doctor Who, I liked David Tennant. I liked Matt Smith a little bit better than David Tennant. And part of the thing that made me sour a bit on David Tennant was his last couple episodes because he was so whiny about not wanting to go. I don't know if that was David Tennant or they were just making it the character of the 10th Doctor. But I welcome him back. I like the fact that David Tennant still embraces the geeky side of his career. I mean, he's doing Star Wars now, and so he's in the Doctor Who. Bringing back Catherine Tate as Donna Noble. When I first watched the Donna Noble episodes, I didn't know anything about Catherine Tate, and I found her annoying. But now I've become a huge fan of Catherine Tate for her Catherine Tate show and the other things that she's done and The Office. Now I'm looking forward to seeing her in a new role because she was a unique character in that. The next trailer I want to play is for Argyle, which comes to theaters on February 2nd.
Oh my God, you're Ellie Conway.
Author of the Argyle series, Ellie Conway!
I am such a fan!
Oh yeah? What is it you do?
Espionage.
Would you
sign my book?
Here we go.
Who are these people?
Real life spies.
Why would they care about me?
Because you're a fortune teller, Ellie. What you wrote in your new book actually happened, and you kicked a hornet's nest you didn't even know existed.
This is kind of a story we've seen before. It reminds me a little bit of Romancing the Stone, if you remember that movie from the mid-80s, where you had a romance novelist played by Kathleen Turner get wrapped up and swept away in this international adventure and fall in love with Michael Douglas and everything like that. But Argyle is kind of that same premise where Bryce Dallas Howard plays a spy novelist, but she turns out she gets all pulled into the spy game. And it looks like it might be kind of fun. Matthew Vaughn's good. I think sometimes his stuff goes a little bit too over the top. There's things in his stuff that I don't think ages well, especially if you look at the first Kingsman. There's stuff that really does not age well in that. Even though some people like to just give it a pass because it's cool to like Matthew Vaughn. But still, I'm looking forward to Argyle. That might be a nice little breath of fresh air at the beginning of February on, like, Super Bowl weekend. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Launchpad Season 2 and the wonderful world of Henry Sugar. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Launchpad Season 2. I don't know, a lot of people don't know about this series. It's on Disney Plus. And let's just go ahead and play the trailer for it. Disney Plus offers short filmmaking opportunities to underrepresented directors that result in a diverse slate of stories.
Tell me something. What is it that you truly desire?
Many trips and many falls, got familiar with my face against the ground. No matter if I'm scared of it, but I know exactly what.
I'm ready.
Now let's get going.
The real power is in there.
Your family loves you.
This was a program started by Disney several years ago, and they wanted to focus on directors, like I said, that are underrepresented. People of color, minorities, LGBT community, women, that sort of thing. If you look at directors, even now and today, a lot has changed, but still, the majority of directors in Hollywood are straight white men. Now, there are ones that aren't. Greta Gerwig has the biggest movie of the year, and she's a woman. And I mentioned Bryce Dallas Howard in the last segment for being in Argylle, and she's a director in her own right. Just because you can show me people who are from those groups does not mean that they're represented to the level of numbers that are in the population. And so to foster that, Disney started this thing called Launchpad, and they people would get chosen, and they do a little short film, and they're like 20 minutes, and there's like six episodes. And I think it's a great program to have. I support it wholeheartedly. I think it's good that Disney's doing it. And I know that there's going to be people going, oh, this is just all more wokeism, blah, blah. Dial back. You don't have to watch it. Just because it exists and just because a company is doing it does not mean you have to watch it. All the stuff that's in these short films, it's all uplifting, positive messaging. And if that annoys you, don't watch it. You really kind of have to dig to find this on Disney Plus. When Loki drops next week, it's going to push the Launchpad stuff underneath it. So just because you may not like it does not mean you have to take it away from other people. Now, in this one, there's there's one of the stories is about a girl and she's Hispanic and she lives in a trailer park and she's trying to make her grandmother's recipes, because her grandmother's passed away, enter a cooking contest. And it's her discovering her community with that. And it's a positive message. There's another one about this kid. He's a black kid in sort of an at-risk community. And his father is a known martial arts expert in the community, in the history of the community. And it's him learning about it and figuring out how it can work into his life and dealing with the relationship with his father. That's very positive. Is it woke? Yes. That's okay. And there's other ones, like I said, they deal with, there's one that's done by a Native American, there's some that has the LGBT, and there's ones that involve different ethnicities. And like I said, at their core, they're uplifting, positive short films. And I think that works. I mean, these smaller focused stories can be predictable, but they do show true passion for their message. I'm going to say that Launchpad Season 2 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews and talk about the wonderful story of Henry Sugar. Wes Anderson directs this charming Roald Dahl tale of a millionaire who develops a special skill that makes him reconsider wealth.
Henry Sugar was 41 years old, unmarried and rich.
The following is what Henry read in the Little Blue Exercise Book.
Gentlemen, I am a man who can see without using his eyes.
I was flabbergasted.
This is a terrific piece of information.
An extraordinary thing happened.
All at once, he sees through his own skin, like an X-ray. Only better, he sees everything. Henry was now almost certainly capable of making money faster than any other person in the entire world.
I wasn't even aware they were making this movie until it was made a couple of weeks ago. And I thought it was a full-length feature. It's not. It's a 39-minute short film on Netflix. And before I even talk about the movie, I just want to say, I love them to normalize short films as a viable source of entertainment. And that's one thing I think streaming can do. for as much as everybody slags on streaming, I think streaming is a great place for you to watch short films because you're not plopping down $15 to go see a movie in the theater and be like, that's 40 minutes. That's not worth it. So already you have short films represented here. I know Netflix sometimes does short films and they have them like for their animated stuff for Oscar consideration and short film consideration. I know Apple TV Plus has some short films on it. And Hulu has a whole bunch of Huluween short films. And that's not even touching on things like Max or Disney Plus that have the cartoons on them. But it's a 39-minute movie, and it stars Benedict Cumberbatch. It's a Roald Dahl story, but it's a little bit more of an adult story. Not an adult story, but a more grown-up story than something like Matilda or The Fantastic Mr. Fox, which Wes Anderson directed based on a Roald Dahl book. And both Wes Anderson and Roald Dahl are very quirky in their style, but they're very different quirks. But they mesh together extremely well, which was evidenced by Fantastic Mr. Fox. And it's nice to see him do a live-action version of something. From what I understand, Netflix actually has the rights to another piece that Wes Anderson's going to do. That's another short film. And I love that. Because here's the thing. Sometimes a story just needs 40 minutes. Sometimes a story just needs 20 minutes. Not everything needs to be 90 to 125 minutes. And if they were to take this story and develop it into a feature script, it would dilute the impact of it, I think. I mean, you could do it, and I can see where they would develop characters and dialogue, but this movie, it's very Wes Anderson because it's that almost theatrical backdrop, cardboard cutout type presentation, a lot of narration of characters talking about what they're doing or what they were. And there's like a story within a story within a story of them, of people recalling different things. But it feels very in line with Roald Dahl. I've never read the story, but it feels like a Roald Dahl story. And it has a great little message because the whole thing is this guy finds a way to basically make money off of casinos. And it becomes so easy, he's like, well, I got to do something creative. He's not just there to enrich himself. He's kind of bored already because he's a millionaire in that time. But he wants to do something different. And it has a very positive message, a very good spin. And it, now, as much as any other time, it's always good to remind yourself that money's nice. Don't get me wrong. I love money. I love to have money. But I don't want to be controlled by money. And I don't want money to be my only pursuit, which is why I'm in the radio. But the avarice that some people have today, the love of money, that's actually what the seven deadly sins is. It's not greed. It's avarice. Avarice is like uber greed. And I think that's good to revisit because wealth is not everything. And if your wealth isn't doing something good for people, then what's the point of hoarding it? Unless all you want to do is just have all the toys. So it's a beautifully made movie. It's got some great acting. It's very dry because it's Wes Anderson. But yeah, it's this perfect mix of the different quirkiness of Roald Dahl and Wes Anderson. And this is as relevant today as it ever was. I'm going to say the wonderful story of Henry Sugar totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Saw X, The Creator, and Paw Patrol, The Mighty Movie. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the big one, or what I think is going to be the big one this weekend, and that is Saw X, or Saw 10, or Saw X. I don't care how you pronounce it. I call it Saw X, just because I called Fast X Fast X. I didn't call it Fast 10. The killer Jigsaw is motivated with revenge to get back at the folks who swindled him during a proposed cure for his cancer.
According to these scans, the tumor was never removed.
How much time do I have?
Months, at best.
I still have a lot of work that needs to be done.
Hello, everyone. It's time to play a game. You all pretended to cure me, but what I have planned for each of you is very real.
I've actually always kind of had a soft spot for the Saw movies, and here's why. And I know some people don't agree with me on this. There's this weird moral center to them. Part of the impetus for Saw, the character of Saw, was this John Kramer character, Jigsaw. And he finds out he has cancer, terminal cancer. He doesn't have much time left, and he really wants more life, and he's annoyed, it's probably the best way of saying it, with people who don't value life and don't value the time they have. In particular, the people that are doing bad things and using their time on this earth to cheat or harm other people. And what he will do is he'd take people and put them in these horrible situations with these torture devices that are grisly and terrible, and they have to overcome their fear and their pain to make it out, so to speak. If they can make it out, they might have a new look on life. Spoiler alert, they usually don't. Usually they die in some gruesome, horrible way. He always ran by a code, and that's one of the reasons why I thought the series fell apart. Because by the time you got to the like 6th, 7th episode of it, they were just going after random people. They were, or like the wife of somebody who was bad. And I'm like, well, that's not her fault. Oh yeah, she married a jerk, but she didn't commit those crimes. And so you see that happening, and they ran out of the creativity of the rules that Jigsaw put in place. Well, in this movie, it takes place like around the, I don't know, the second or third movie, because Jigsaw ends up dying in the middle of the series. So it's before he dies, and he went to go get this experimental treatment on cancer, and it turns out he was basically just swindled. It was a con job. And this is not the guy you want to sell like a bad insurance policy to, because he'll come after you. And so he goes after the people who did this and puts them in a quite horrible situation where it gets very, very grisly. But like the first half of the movie is kind of this character study. It's this look at this guy who's lost all hope in life and getting a new lease on life and getting a new idea of what he can do. And actually reducing the bitterness in his life where he might abandon all the horrible things he was doing. Well, and of course, then he finds out and then it takes a really bad turn. So like the first hour, there's one part that's gory in the first hour of the film. But for most of it, that's what it's about. It's a little bit more of a character study of John Kramer. And I found that really interesting. It gets a little dull at times, but I found that to be important. Then in about halfway through the movie, it starts to get gross and it gets very graphic. And not that you don't expect that. It's a Saw movie, for crying out loud. You should not be surprised with anything that happens because it's a Saw movie. They do some really horrible things in these movies. And then it turns into that torture basement type of movie. The second half isn't as, it doesn't have the same, I guess, energy and pacing that the first half does, and they struggle a bit. So it's not a perfect movie, and it does threaten to break its own rules, but it still follows the rules, and that's what I like about this movie. It's also just kind of has this throwback film style. I mean, the Saw franchise is 20 years old, and it feels like the original Saw. It feels like it could have been made around that time. It doesn't feel like they didn't load on the overdone special effects with digital work. They did a lot of practical effects, and that's really what makes this movie work. So, I mean, it provides a throwback style with a more fleshed out story for Jigsaw's background that breathes some new life into the struggling franchise. I'm going to say that Saw X kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We're moving into the section of this show where I haven't had a chance to see some of the movies. There have not been very many screenings, and so it's harder and harder to kind of keep up on all the new movies out. So a lot of times I've been picking one that I think is important to see. As a result, I didn't get a chance to see the next one, which is The Creator. I do want to see it, but I didn't get a chance to see it. But in a future where humans are at war with AI, a mercenary must deal with a new weapon that could bring an end to humanity.
10 years ago today, the artificial intelligence created to protect us detonated a nuclear warhead in Los Angeles. For as long long as AI is a threat, we will never stop hunting them. This is a fight for our very existence.
We're the same. We can't go to heaven. Because you're not good, and I'm not a person.
Did you locate the weapon?
Yeah, it's a key.
Like I said, I'm curious to see this movie because I think it has potential. And I've heard some good things. I've heard some not great things about it, too. It's directed by Gareth Edwards, who is best known for doing Rogue One. That's what most people lay at his feet. I don't like to assign that to him as much. I mean, yes, he directed it, but that was taken away from him by Lucasfilm. He was not in charge of the final cut of that movie. I look at what he did with Godzilla instead, where he made it a movie about not seeing Godzilla. He sometimes works so hard to break the stereotypes, to be iconoclastic, that he gets in his own way. And I felt that that's what he did with Godzilla. I'm looking forward to this one. I'm curious to see where it goes. But making a movie about a sympathetic AI in this day and age, I mean, just this year, with the amount of problems that AI has and the amount of problems that it's going to be causing, and it's not even true AI. I mean, the AI we have going on now is more indexing thing rather than true thought. But it's really kind of tough to be too sympathetic for AI. So I'm hearing mixed reviews about this. I'm sure it looks gorgeous, but, you know, throw enough money at anything is going to look good in Hollywood. But it was not screened, so I'm going to have to give it a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about really quickly is Paw Patrol, the Mighty Movie. It has no relation to Saw. That would be Saw Patrol. The Paw Patrol pups gain superpowers, but when the powers are used against them, it's up to one of them to save the day.
The meteor's heading straight for us!
I think we've got superpowers.
And that's why I wear a hard hat. I feel the need for super speed. I'm a wrecking ball.
Surf's up.
Those should be my superpowers.
Coming in hot.
I'm going to take them one by one. It's showtime.
Well, well, well.
Homedinger.
He looks different than I remember.
I don't watch much Paw Patrol. I watched the first movie they did a couple years ago. I remember it was during the shutdown or at least the limited opening of theaters. And I had a chance to watch a screener at home of it. It's a Paw Patrol movie. I got friends who have little kids that would watch it. But I've seen enough little kids' programmings because I have children myself. I'm sure it's cute. I'm sure it does everything that the Paw Patrol needs to do. But it is one of those movies that it's made for a very specific audience and a very limited audience. So I'm not that. It's a mixture of dogs and superpowers and big trucks. So, that's going to get a lot of people interested in it, at least at the age that would be interested in. So, I mean, they didn't screen it for me. I wasn't expecting it to. So it does kind of get a preemptive suck, but that's okay. It's for another time.
It sucks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Flora and Son and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Exorcist. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on and finish up, actually, the movie reviews. And we're going to be talking about Flora and Son. This actually was in theaters last week in limited release, but now it's available on Apple TV+. A troubled mother from Dublin, Ireland, mends her tenuous relationship with her son using a newfound interest in music.
Young Max, one more offense and you'll be behind bars. Flora, you're his mother. Find him something to do.
You are a great mother.
Am I?
Happy birthday.
What's that?
It's yours.
Don't want to play. Since when am I a guitarist?
I can't go on like this, living in a shoebox with a kid who hates me.
So, you want to learn the guitar?
This is a gift you can take to your grave.
What's your problem?
I didn't know I had a problem.
You're teaching guitar online, love.
Okay, this is one of those movies that everyone seems to love. Everybody's just gushing over. They're saying how great it is and brilliant, a revelation. Not me. I did not like this movie at all. And it's funny, as I'm watching the movie, I'm just like, I didn't like it. I'm grumbling about it. I'm getting distracted. I'm getting bored. And I'm like, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of that movie Once. Remember Once? It came out about 15 years ago. It was about an Irish street performer and like a woman from Eastern Europe. They fall in love and it ended up winning an Academy Award. I think it won the Academy Award for Best Song. But I think it got like a screenplay nomination and it ended up being turned into a Broadway play or musical. I never liked Once. I just hated Once. And I was flabbergasted that people loved that movie. Lo and behold, I looked it up. John Carney, who is the director of Once, guess what he also directed? Florence on. And I'm like, okay, this makes sense now. Because I was getting real Once vibes from this. And that also makes sense why everyone else seems to love it and I just can't stand it. I mean, I don't just dislike this movie. I actively cannot stand this movie. I just do not like this film at all. And a lot of it is due to the fact that I hate the characters. And that's not saying I can't deal with dysfunctional characters. In fact, sometimes I love dysfunctional characters. Dysfunctional characters sometimes are the most interesting characters out there. I mean, heck, I just spent before the commercial break talking about how much I like the Jigsaw character when they finally flesh him out. But give me this, this a single mother in Ireland, and I'm like, she's an idiot. But no, here's the thing. The characters are, I just don't feel they're good people. She's a terrible mother, and her son's a terrible son. And I don't know what's happened in the background of them, but they're both emotionally stunted people who aren't really trying to better themselves. They're just wallowing in their own pathetic nature. And I know that's very real. I know people do that, but I don't want to see movies about them. And Eve Hewson, who plays Flora, who plays the mom, on top of it, she's a Nepo baby. She's Bono's daughter. And there's apparently a quote from her floating around where she's like, I'm not handed money. I earn everything. I'm like, the heck you do. You grew up in a great area of Ireland. You went to the best schools. You had the best tutors. You have access to the industry. Look, I don't care if you're a Nepo baby, but make your own career your own and acknowledge the fact that you got a lot of help. But Eve Hewson, I mean, she's okay in it as an actor, but I didn't find her all that interesting or unique. Basically, the whole thing is it's she's got this criminal son and she doesn't pay attention to her son and she doesn't have a good relationship with him. She's a bad parent. She's objectively a bad parent. She loves her son, but you can still love your kids and be a bad parent. Now, part of it is she finds this old guitar and refurbishes it. And then she wants to take guitar lessons. And so she gets Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character to teach her online. And he is the most insufferable a-hole I've ever seen. Literally, he asks her, what's her favorite song? And she's like, oh, I like You're Beautiful. And he spends the next 5 minutes berating her for liking that song. And again, that's real. Because you get somebody who teaches guitar, if it's not their taste in music, they will berate you for it and they will make you feel about an inch tall for liking something just because you like it. I mean, he's a real jerk, but they put him as this almost romantic figure. And on top of it, Joseph Gordon-Levitt comes off as smug in almost everything he does. Especially things that are wrapped around him. And it's clear that these scenes were certainly wrapped around him. I mean, look, his heart's in the right place, but the characters are just inherently unlikable, and it's topped off with one of the most pretentious and smug Joseph Gordon-Levitt performances ever put to screen. And it glorifies the absolute worst part of music for. They like it for the fame, and they want to be like, the kid wants to be a famous rapper, and he wants to like have the dancing girls on the Cadillac next to him, and that's what he's aspiring to. And I'm like, oh my god, have some respect for yourself. Anyways, no, I know everyone else loved this, but I think Floor and Son sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. They just did a recent release of Exorcist last week on home video. But Exorcist Believer comes out next week. And I thought this was a perfect time to go revisit The Exorcist, because I haven't seen it in a couple years. But it is one of my favorite movies. So let's talk about it. William Friedkin directs this classic tale of a girl possessed by a demon and the priest who tried to drive it out.
Somewhere between science and superstition, there is another world.
Hope your daughter doesn't say she's a demon. She says she's the devil himself.
I'm telling you that that thing upstairs isn't my daughter. Now I want you to tell me that you know for a fact that there's nothing wrong with my daughter except in her mind. You tell me you know for a fact that an exorcism wouldn't do any good. You tell me that!
If you recall last week or the week before, I was answering a listener's question about horror movies. Chris from Tarpon Springs asked if my taste in horror movies and what I can tolerate changes. And I've always said horror is very intimate. It's very personal. It's what scares you. And one of the reasons The Exorcist is so good, and it really became apparent to me when I was watching it this time, is it means different things to different people at different ages. When I was, like a teenager and I saw The Exorcist for the first time, I absolutely identified with Reagan. I identified with the child who was victimized. When I got into my 20s and 30s, I started to identify with Father Karras, who's played by Jason Miller, the younger priest, because that was about my age. And, you know, you're dealing with different things with your career, and you kind of have that mindset. Well, now when I watch it, I identify with Chris McNeil, who's played by Ellen Burstyn, the mother, the parent who's watching their child go through this. I'll share this little bit of something with you, and I'm not going to go into too much detail because it's personal, but we recently had a health scare with one of our kids. I know exactly what it's like going to a doctor's office and just having them not know what's wrong. And fortunately for us, we got it resolved. But I really understand the horror, the real life horror, that Ellen Burstyn's character goes through in this movie, because something's wrong with her daughter. Something's wrong with her kid, her baby. And she can't do anything about it. And every time she takes it to somebody, they're like, I don't know. I mean, they're not that flippant about it, but you want to think that medicine, that modern medicine is a cure-all, but it's not. A lot of medicine is a real hit-or-miss science where you have to guess things and you have to look at evidence and you almost have to do this detective thing. For as much as it is an exact science, it's not an exact science at all. And that's terrifying. And that's the real horror. You can conceptualize demons because then it's external and you can say, oh, you can drive it out. But the real terror and the real horror, which is mirrored in the book, is about not knowing what's wrong with your kid and whether it is medical or mental or psychological before you go racing to a priest to get an exorcism. But The Exorcist is a fantastic movie. It's a slow burn, and so many people can learn from that now. It starts off slow. Little things. So by the time you get to the last 20 minutes of the movie and Reagan's head's spinning around and she's throwing up pea soup everywhere, that's not a jump. You've ramped up into that. If you were to watch the ending of The Exorcist and never seen it, it would look silly. But you build up to that point. And that's the brilliance of William Friedkin's direction, but also the style of 1970s filmmaking. And that's what makes it work. I mean, this is the gold standard of possession films, and it works on multiple levels across multiple generations. The Exorcist totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it. I need to go. Coming up next week, I'm going to be talking about The Exorcist Believer, Pet Sematary Bloodlines, and Loki Season 2. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.